My name's Tracy. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. I was more nervous, like driving up and getting anxious about talking about me. Okay, that was I do a lot of listening, and that's pretty easy for me, but talking about me is a little more difficult. I'm going to share a teeny bit about my history and a lot more about how my life has been for the last 23 years. And hopefully that will find its way to someone tonight. I am 50 years old, so I had been drinking since I started when I was 12, and I stopped when I was 26. I relapsed and lost 8 months, and somewhere in the math that equals like 50 years. I came from an alcoholic household. My mother was practicing alcoholic all my life. And I think what's important about that is that there are things that I learned how to do well, and some of them were healthy things and some of them weren't. I came from a German-Irish combination, very stoic German family who didn't talk about emotions and feelings, and an Irish mother who drank her way through most events and so did most of my mother's relatives, my relatives. And I didn't learn a lot of the things that most of us don't, which is how to communicate, how to take care of myself, how to let other people live their lives and let that be okay. And by the time I was 12, I had my first beer, which tasted pretty bad. I never liked the taste of alcohol, even from a young kid. My first drug really was food. When I was 6 years old, I found the magic of chocolate, and I specifically remember my cousin coming to take care of me, watch over me while my parents were gone, and we got a whole box of Heath bars and sat on the bed and ate about 3 or 4 of them each, and she said, "Someday you're going to look back on this, and you're going to remember that if your mom was home, we'd be in big trouble." And that was the beginning of learning that food could change things for me. And so I moved from food to alcohol around 12, 13, and then later got into alcohol and drugs. But for a very long time, alcohol was my primary relationship. When I was 26, so I drank from about 12 to 26, of course not daily or real frequently as a young kid, but whenever I could get, beer. I didn't like hard liquor or wine, and I have 3 stepbrothers who are a lot older than I was, so there were lots of opportunities to drink. And my parents divorced when I was 9, and my father remarried a woman, and they traveled a lot and left me at home with these 3 older brothers, and that really kind of set my career off and running. They smoked cigarettes and they drank, and I started smoking when I was 12 in addition to drinking. And, let's see, by the time I was 12, I had a nice fat weight problem, and I also was like many of the people that I hear in recovery. You know, I didn't feel real good about me. I didn't fit in with other girls my age. I was afraid of people, afraid of not getting it right. My self-esteem was in a really bad place. And when I turned 14, I went from one parent to another. I left. My parents were divorced. My dad remarried. And at 14, I went to live with my mom. And my mom was dry at that time, not sober. And I spent the rest of my teenage years and a good part of my adult life with her and living in Las Vegas, Nevada. And, you know, Las Vegas really does have a quiet side. You wouldn't know that if you went there as a visitor because it's pretty much a party town if you stick to the strip or if you go to casinos. But there was a quiet side of Las Vegas, and especially if you didn't drink and gamble, and you really couldn't gamble if you lived there. And I lived there until I was 26, the same year that I stopped drinking. And I'll tell you a little bit about what happened and what prompted me to leave the alcohol and the drugs behind. My mother had remarried. Both my parents were married four times, four times each. And my young life was filled with a succession of parents, and some of them okay, some of them not so great. And my mom's third husband had been, they'd been together for a long time. He was a good guy. He stopped drinking, and he really became I don't think he'd call him a dad, but he definitely was. He cared about me, and he did his best to show up. And he got sick, and we found out he had a brain tumor, and within 6 months he was dead. And my mom had been dry for 12 years, and she started drinking. And within 6 months she had remarried. This was her fourth husband. And he was a drinker, and within 2 years from the date that my stepfather died of the brain tumor, my mother was dead. And she was hit she was a passenger in a car, and they hit a telephone pole while he was driving, and there was construction on the road, and she was a .31, very intoxicated. And that, for me, was, you think, well, that would be the beginning of the beginning, but that was like the beginning of the end for me. I drank for about 6 months after that, and by that time I had already been married and was in the process of a divorce. Probably one of the worst times in my entire life. I had pushed everybody who cared about me away. I had lost my mom, my relationship with my dad. I'm an only child, so I don't have any siblings. My relationship with my dad was non-existent. And I was depressed and lonely and scared. And every night I would come home from work and I would drink. And sometimes I'd do drugs. And I wouldn't even remember going to bed. I would smoke and drop, you know, the ash of a cigarette, like, on the carpet, like, this long. And, you know, it's a miracle that I didn't burn myself up or, okay, I'm getting caught now. But it was just a really terrible time. I didn't have anybody in that town anymore, and I didn't have any reason to be there. I didn't have much reason to go on living except for I had a job and I had a home and a dog. And as much as I hate to say it, you know, I couldn't handle real relationships with people. So I had a dog, and I had her for 19 years. And that dog became more of a relationship, and it was her and the bottle were what sustained me for certainly 5, 6, 7 years, and that 6 months before I actually stopped drinking. And then I don't know what happened. Oh, I don't know. One night I must have gotten really drunk and blacked out, and in the morning I woke up and I couldn't find my car. And I didn't remember going out the night before, and it scared me to death. And the only way that I found my car was because somebody from my job called me and asked me where I was, because my car was parked in the parking lot at the place that I worked. And so fortunately I found out that's where my car was, and that just really shook me up. That scared the heck out of me. Yeah, that too. And that was the beginning of me telling somebody that I have a problem, and that somebody said, you know what, let's go get help, and that was the end of my drinking career. You know, I could get into great detail, but it isn't really worth it. All I can tell you is that the things that happened when I was a kid, I know today, they were not my fault. And I have spent a lot of my adult life trying to work through those things, and yet I always, on some level, believe that the bad things that happened were because of me, or because I was inadequate or not good enough, or in some way I was responsible for those things. And today I know that the people who raised me and the people who were involved in my life when I was a kid, they did what they did, and it didn't have anything to do with me. And today I find great freedom in that knowledge. And I think it's one of the things that's kept me moving forward. So I went to my first meeting, and I was in Las Vegas, and I went into a huge, there were probably 200 people at this meeting, and I walked in, and I went by myself, and I was scared to death, and you weren't at all what I thought you would be. Some people actually, you know, like, had nice clothes on, and, you know, all of their teeth, and I mean, I really had a stereotype in my head about what people who were alcoholics and drug addicts were all about, because that certainly wasn't me. I'd never been arrested. No, I'd never been in any real trouble. My real trouble came from here and here. It wasn't about what was going on out there. Woo! And I sat in the back. Actually, I stood in the back because there wasn't any place to sit. And I copped an attitude from the first, maybe the second minute that I was in the room. And then somebody started talking about God. I've heard this a zillion times coming from somebody else's mouth. Somebody started talking about God, and I thought, holy crap, these people, you know. I just thought you were all, you know, probably Bible thumpers or not being honest. And then at the end of the meeting, when everybody stood up and held hands and said a prayer, that just pretty much pushed me over the edge. And I went home and drank that night and thought, you know, this is bullshit. Excuse my language. But I'm not going to do this. It's ridiculous, you know. So what happened was I had already hooked up with a woman who worked with me, who had gotten into recovery about 2 weeks before I did. So I had to be accountable to somebody, and I told her that I was going to go to a meeting that weekend, and she was supposed to meet me, but that didn't happen. But the next time that I went to work, she said, "So, did you go?" And I said, "Yeah, where were you?" And she said, "Well, you know, blah, blah, blah." And she said, "How did you like it?" And I said, "I didn't. They're all weird. You know, they all act like they're all happy and everything. And, you know, how can you be happy? Because how can you be happy without something to make you happy?" I mean, my biggest fear about not drinking or using was, how was I going to live? How was I going to find happiness? How was I going to laugh and have fun? And what was I going to do? You know, life is pretty boring. When you're out there and thinking about quitting, life is freaking boring. And so we tried it again. And I have to tell you about my first three meetings, because if I wouldn't have checked at it, I probably would have never come back. The second meeting that I went to, I went with my friend. And she had been talking to me about what a sponsor is and brought me pamphlets, and she was really into the program. And she, when we sat at the meeting, and the meeting was pretty good. It wasn't as gaudy. And she said, "Okay, you know what, you need to get a sponsor, and, you know, you should ask somebody." And so I walked up to the first person that I saw in that meeting that looked halfway normal, and I said, "You know, they tell me I need to get a sponsor. Do you think you can help me with that?" And the woman said, "Well, how long have you been coming here?" And I said, "Well, this is my second meeting." And she said, "Well, you know what, call me when you've been here for 6 weeks." And I was so like, "What? That's not what you're supposed to do." And I went back to my friend and I said, "You know, Pam, she said no." And she goes, "Well, don't worry about it. She doesn't know you. It's not about you anyway, you know." And I was just like, "Okay, fine. I'm coming to these meetings. I'm dealing with all you people. And you're all happy and hugging each other. And that pissed me off too." And now I ask somebody to sponsor me, and the woman says, "No. I want to know that you're serious about this." You know, today I think about her and I think, you know, I have to give her some credit. Because, you know, she didn't want to party around with somebody who was just kind of half in the program. You know, I was mad for a long time and thought that, you know, if she would have said no, I mean, if she would have said yes to me, I'm not sure what would have happened. But it almost pushed me out of the program. But it didn't. And today I appreciate that she knew what she needed and wanted, and she was able to put herself out there. But for a long time I had a resentment against her, and I didn't get a sponsor until I had 6 months in the program. I refused to take that risk again. And so, anyway, that's my second. Okay, the third meeting that I went to, what really got me, and that's why if you're a newcomer, please give it a chance. Keep going. If you don't like this meeting, then find another one. There are so many meetings out there. If something bothers you, go to another meeting. Go to meetings until you find one that you like. And go to that one and build on that. But the third meeting really caught me. I went to the third meeting, and it was a topic discussion meeting, and the topic was acceptance. And I heard some things that got in, and that pretty much was the beginning of my recovery and my belief that all of you in the program could do something for me. So I'm going to just go skip ahead to what things are like today for me, because I don't want to give everyone a chance to share. In 7 days from today, in 7 days from today, I'm going to be married 20 years. And what that means to me is, and 20 years to someone who's in recovery and someone who I get along with and I love more today than I did the first day of our marriage, which is what normal, healthy people do. Love grows over time. And I never thought that I was capable of maintaining a relationship with someone. I didn't know how to do it. And I didn't not know how because I drank, but I drank because I didn't know how. And it was easier to have my lover and my relationship be, you know, in a bottle, in a cup, in a can, than it was to do it for real. And in 7 days, I'm going to have my 20th anniversary, the longest relationship that I've had with any living entity, not even human being, because I had my dog for 19 years. And you may think this is weird, but to me, I lived with one parent until I was 9. I lived with the next parent until I was 26. That's when my mother died. And I wasn't with my father from 14 to 26. And I have had these people in my life, but I haven't had active relationships with them. My dog was the longest relationship that I had. Show up every day, feed the dog, take care of the dog, you know, every single day. Out of my whole life, I could maintain a relationship with an animal who didn't talk back, who would never leave me no matter how cranky I was. And here today, on my 23rd birthday, I'm going to be married to a human being, a man, and not just a man, you know, somebody who knows what we go through, who's been there, done that, and, you know, on some level, it tells me that I'm deserving of that. And I've worked hard for it. And the other thing that I want to tell you is that I have 2 children who have never seen me under the influence. I take that back. I had surgery, and my daughter laughed at me because I was still under anesthesia when I came out of it. She told me, she laughed at me and said that I was behaving really weird and everything. But my kids have never seen me or my husband under the influence of alcohol or any drug their entire life. My son is 19, and yes, I got married to my husband because I was pregnant, but you know what? It started out on the wrong foot, but it's gotten better every year. But I have a son who's 19 years old that is still a virgin, that doesn't drink and doesn't smoke, and went away to college and hangs out at a church where he doesn't, like, do the God thing because the teens at the church they have fun without using chemicals. So that's what he's done. He's gone away from the campus. He lives in a dorm. He's gone outside of the campus and got involved with kids, teenagers in a church because that's a safe place for him. And I looked at my husband and said, you know, what the hell happened? How did we do that? 2 addicts, alcoholics, excuse me, I know it's an 80. I mean, the 2 messed up people together, and we've produced this child. And I'm not saying that it's all our, you know, we're not taking all the credit for the good or credit for the bad, but, you know, we have a great deal of influence on our children. And just because my husband and I have been clean and sober doesn't mean that we do everything right. It doesn't mean that we're healthy and great parents, but I still today, I'm so incredibly grateful for the life that I have. And I have a daughter that's 15 years old. She's in the same boat, you know. And she seems pretty normal to me, although I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop that it hasn't. And maybe it won't, I don't know. But I just want to say to everybody in the room that I'm really proud of all of you, no matter what your situation is or where you are. And I may not, you know, I don't do my recovery perfectly. I don't go to enough meetings, and I probably will never change that. I just am who I am. But I appreciate every single person in this room and the hard work that you do, because I know how hard it is to maintain your recovery every day, week in, week out, year in, year out. It's a fight. Sometimes it's a pleasure, and it's a life-lasting condition that you'll have forever. And I have more joy in my life. I have more peace in my life and more acceptance of people in general and me today than I ever thought possible. And so, did you mean we're going to end early? You said start late and end early?
We've still got probably 8 minutes.
Okay. Okay, well, that's good. I'm going to call it quits. And
I can answer questions.
What? That's weird. That's weird. Okay. Yeah, that's what... I just thought maybe people wanted to share or something, but questions are fine. I never heard of them. Okay. Okay, I don't know. What are you doing? Can I sit down?
You're awesome. I swear.
People told me to do. To be really honest with you, I wanted to have a relationship with my higher power, and I knew that if I continued to drink and use, that it was going to happen. I was so depressed that it only took 3 or 4 days for me to start to feel better and to realize that the alcohol was making me more depressed. It didn't take very long for that to happen in my head to say, God, you know, you do feel better. And then I got a sponsor who was the most wonderful, accepting, warm, just fabulous. And she loved me no matter what happened, and she made me do things I didn't want to do, but that was okay. And no matter, you know, even if I procrastinated, even if I didn't do things the way that she wanted me to, you know, she'd yell at me, and then she'd say, come here, and she'd put her arm around me, and she'd hug me, and it'd always be okay, and no matter what happened. And I just had never had that. It was the love of the people that were in the program, that were in my life, that I let in, and the need to be accepted and a part of a group. I never felt at home anywhere until I came here and I listened to all of you telling my story, to all of you talking about the pain and the fear that you experienced at doing things that were normal, at listening to you talk about not knowing what normal was and trying to figure that out and getting it wrong a lot of the time. So I think that's, you know, I just needed to be loved and accepted, and that's what I got. That's what kept me going.
Whatever happened to him?
I left Las Vegas, and we wrote back and forth for a while, but I lost contact with her.
So you ended up, like, being friends?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we fished. We went to Lake Mead and talked about how probably there were bodies on the bottom of the river, you know, the lake, and we went, she taught me how to fish, and we went and we fished, you know? It was good. I never fished before, so fishing without a beer wasn't a big deal for me. Yeah, but it was, yeah, she was a good friend. Thanks for asking. Forgot about that. Yeah.
I know that you've helped a lot of people in this room, me being one of them, in a tremendous way. And I'm just wondering how helping others helps you in your sobriety.
Reminds me of what the disease has to offer, and we're underneath all the crap, you know, underneath all the defense mechanisms, underneath the anger and all the stuff that we wall ourselves off with is a heart, you know. I mean, everybody who comes in for help, they're wounded, they're hurting. I just know that there's other possibilities, you know, that you can heal. So it just reminds me that there's always hope and that there's always something beyond the bottle and the pill and the... So it inspires me. I just... You guys all amaze me every day. Yeah, thanks, Eric.
My name's
Elsie. Hi, Elsie.
What question
moved you by Joe? Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. I swear I've never moved back to California. When I lived in Nevada, I love Nevada. Nevada's a good state. Las Vegas may not be the greatest place for a recovering person to live, but Nevada has no state tax, and there are a lot of great things. But I moved back here for the wrong reasons at first to California. But I moved to Visalia because my husband and I had just gotten married, and we had I had my son, who's 2 and a half, and we lived in Pacific Grove, which is an absolutely beautiful town. And you can't even touch a house for under $250,000. There's just no way. In fact, we knew it, and his parents lived here. And when you have a baby, you need help. And, I needed to be around some parent. And I needed to be around another woman who could, like, help me, like, figure out how to do this mom thing, because I had no idea how to do it. So that's really family. Yeah. And here I am, like, 15, 16 years, 17. Yeah. Wow, 17 and a half years later. Going back to the coast, though. Yeah. California, but the coast. Okay, this is really uncomfortable up here. So, can we ask?
What's the total time she is over?
You came in late.
Oh, today is my 23rd birthday.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
If anyone would have saw this crowd drinking, they'd never thought they'd be struck silent.
You know, today one of the things that I did this morning was I have two pictures that I don't look at them every birthday, but I try to keep them. They're in my hope chest. I don't know why they're in my hope chest, but One of them is a picture of me when I was 19 years old, and I was at this outdoor concert. In fact, some people in here will recognize the name. It was Bach Ventura Overdrive and Elvin Bishop. And I was blissed out of my mind and loaded to the gills. And just somebody took my picture, and I was like this with one of my girlfriends. My eyes were falling out of my head, all red. And you know, I think I thought I looked good in that picture, too. Because I got the, you know, thing going on. And I have that picture, and I keep it. And then I have another picture of my mom. And my mom started drinking after my stepdad died of the brain tumor. She started drinking again. And right before she died on Thanksgiving, and she died on December 4th, I have a picture of her sitting in my house on her husband's lap, and she was just completely, she looked worse than I'd ever seen her. And those two pictures I take a look at because, you know, I look at her picture to remind myself of what the yes are. You know, because that's waiting for me should I choose to make a bad, you know, decision if I go ever go back out there. And I look at the other picture because I just want to remind myself that, okay, I used to think it was fun, and I think way back, but the reality is when I look at that picture, what I see is somebody who's just like out of her gourd, you know, just screwed up, and that was a really bad night. The whole night was bad. And it just reminds me of, you know, stuff that I need to remember because it's easy to forget the ugly. So.
All right.
Okay.